Chapter 52, The Black Prince. Prince Ulrich bowed in a quick, formal manner.
Herr Greis.
He snapped his heels together, his extraordinarily burnished knee-high boots so tightly fitting around his jodhpurs that they might have been painted on to his legs.
And Miss Middleton.
I wondered in a brief moment of frivolity if I was supposed to curtsy, but he took my hand in his and pressed it to his beautifully trimmed and waxed imperial moustaches, and I decided that I would train George to adopt that habit as soon as possible.
You look enchanting.
His voice was so deep and resonant that I resisted the urge to tell him that he did too, or to advise him to consult an oculist. Sometimes I like to be lied to, and this was one of those times. In his civilian clothes, the prince had cut an impressive figure. In uniform, he was spectacular. How do you do? Was all I could manage, and I hoped to heaven that I was not simpering.
A client?
The prince asked. His eyes flashed the many colours of our surroundings as he surveyed us both.
We have had worse,
I assured him.
You must be very proud of your guardian.
The prince released my hand.
Herr Greis is a hero of the German Confederation. He is probably too modest to tell you that he saved the life of our Crown Prince Wilhelm at great risk to his own.
Modesty was not one of my guardian's most outstanding virtues, but I replied demurely, I believe that is how he lost his eye.
And gained a grand cross.
Prince Ulrich jutted his jaw. Not much use for seeing with, I observed, and the prince smiled uncertainly.
I am always apologizing for Miss Middleton, Mr. G explained. She has a sense of humor. But that is delightful,
the prince assured him. You like a woman with spirit, I reminded him, and Prince Ulrich inclined his head.
Tonight, Miss Middleton, with your permission, we make a fresh start.
We shall see, I said non-committally. The prince offered me his arm and led me across the multicoloured Minton tiles and round a Moorish screen. He was slightly stiff in his right leg, I thought. We passed into an antechamber, a small room by this hotel's standards, mahogany-lined with long rose drapes, matching the carpet and the starred ceiling. Are you in England for long, Prince Ulrich? I asked as he settled me on a sofa.
3 or 4 months,
he replied. Have you visited before?
Many times.
The prince carefully arranged his coat to avoid creasing it as he sat in an upright armchair.
It is almost a second home for me.
I hear you have come from the Berlin Conference, I remarked. Mr. G leaned back in his chair, but Prince Ulrich's back was straight, and I could not imagine him ever slouching.
You might say I am an informal delegate.
The scramble for Africa, I murmured, and the prince turned to me quizzically.
You are not approving? Miss Middleton has unusual views and never knows when to keep them occult,
Mr. G broke in. The prince laughed.
I like a woman with her own mind. She certainly has that, Your Highness,
my guardian assured him.
Please, call me Ulrich, and that applies also to you, Miss Middleton.
Then you must call me March.
I cannot fully reciprocate, Mr. G informed him, for though I am immensely pleased with my Christian name, I dislike hearing it spoken almost as much as the squawking of Jenny Lind or the braying of donkeys.
I am not sure Mr. Greis can tell the difference, I said, as our host straightened his back again.
Of course I can,
my guardian retorted indignantly.
Donkeys have longer ears and rarely wear dresses. Why are you both laughing? Forgive me,
the prince snapped to attention.
I was thinking you are making the joke. But why?
Mr. G looked uncharacteristically baffled. The prince and I coughed.
May I call you Greis in that case? You may,
Sidney Greis conceded,
and I shall throw formality to the winds and address you as Sir.
Very well.
The prince showed us each to our own sofas and settled in a third. His cane propped against the side, and at a click of his fingers a waiter appeared from the adjacent room, bearing a tray with two deep saucer glasses and one tall tumbler.
I hope you like wine, Prince Ulrich said.
I would have preferred a Bombay, but I took a sip. This is very good.
Sekt, made with the Riesling grape, he told me. It is similar as champagne, but better because it is from the Rhine.
Take mine away and evacuate the contents, Mr. G instructed the waiter.
My apologies, the prince said. I understood that you always drink water.
Clearly, I cannot always drink water, my godfather told him, in much the same tone as he adopted to lecture me,
or I should not have time to do anything else. But this water has ice in it, and I do not trust ice.
It is perfectly clean, sir,
the waiter assured him. He was an elderly man with a stooped back and a few strands of hair swept sideways on his pate. The prince sought to reassure his guest.
I have had ice here with no problems. I do not trust ice not to clink against the side of the glass, Mr. G explained. It unsettles me, and I do not like to be unsettled.
I shall fetch a fresh glass immediately, sir.
The waiter went away.
I am interested in how you think we should solve the African problem, Miss Middleton.
Our host was holding his wine untasted whilst I was halfway through mine.
But why is it a problem? I asked,
and Mr. G shot me a warning glance.
We must divide the Dark Continent fairly, Prince Ulrich explained, and raised his glass.
The waiter reappeared with a more satisfactory drink for my guardian.
Shall we prepare the first course, Your Highness?
Do so.
The prince flipped a hand and the waiter drifted away.
But what right have we to take any of Africa in the first place?
I saw no reason to leave him with the closing remark.
I should think the same right as the British have in India,
Prince Ulrich replied, unperturbed by my question. Having lived in India for 3 years, I am not sure that we have any right to be there either. I finished my glass of wine. Sidney Grice clipped on his pince-nez and inspected his finger plates.
Then you have seen how the lot of the ignorant natives is improved by civilization,
Schlangazan told me.
They are not ignorant, I rounded on him with ill-concealed fury. The Indians have a culture of literature, art, architecture, and music, stretching back to when our nations were living in mud huts.
The Gascony Le Grices still are,
my godfather contributed.
There you have it, Prince Ulrich clapped his hands together. The Indians are half-civilized already, and some of them are having quite light skins. But the Africans are a different breed altogether. They cannot read, they eat each other, and they have not even heard of God. Most of them are hardly human. We cannot leave a whole continent in the hand of wild savages.
The prince explained that so reasonably that I was tempted to grab his stick and crown him with it, but Mr. G was already reaching over.
Did you ascertain from whence that button came, sir?
He picked the cane up, and our host watched uneasily.
Indeed.
The prince clicked his fingers and called, Hans! And a dignified man in a black frock coat appeared with a bow and carrying a grey silk waistcoat over his arm.
Hans is my valet, Schlangazan introduced him.
May I see? I asked.
Die Fräulein wünscht es zu prüfen,
Sidney Grice translated, and the valet brought it to me. The lowest button was missing, and the thread still hanging. But other than that, I could see nothing unusual.
Oh, yes, Sidney Grice gave it a cursory look. Das ist alles.
The prince said something else. Hans bowed again and left.
How long do you expect the conference to last? I inquired, unwilling to let his remarks on the subject go.
True craftsmanship, Mr. G commented,
and banged the cane on the floor like the staff of a town crier.
"Take care, Grice," Prince Ulrich warned. "It is loaded and at full pressure."
Sidney Grice rested the cane across his knees.
"Is this the safety catch?"
He twisted a projection.
"Yes," the prince put out a hand, "and you have just released it. And this the trigger?" "Yeah, and very—"
He searched for the word. "Sensitive," I supplied, and saw an index finger poise over a silver button set into the underside of the handle. "Watch out," I cried. "It is pointing straight at me."
"A straight cane cannot point any way other than straight,"
my guardian informed me, and his finger crooked. There was a sharp snap. I had heard that sound before, and a whacking noise close by. I leapt back and saw that my handbag on the sofa beside me had jumped at the same time, and that the sage green material, chosen with such care to match my dress, was torn open and trickling clear liquid onto the cushion. "You have shot my father's hip flask." I ripped open the clasp. "And his cigarette case."
"Good gracious," Sidney Grice breathed. "I had better return your weapon within 119 seconds.
The waiter reappeared.
"Dinner is served, Your Highness, sir, miss,"
he announced, with a wary glance at my guardian, peering down the muzzle of the gun.
"Good."
Sidney Grice passed the cane back to our bemused but unruffled host.
"I dislike dining with anybody who has the means to shoot me." "And I vis anybody who is careless with firearms,"
Prince Ulrich smiled as he offered me his arm.
"Have no fear on that score."
Sidney Grice limped ahead of both of us.
"I shall not permit Miss Middleton to lay an anthropoidal dactyl upon it."
I had always thought that my fingers were no worse than anyone else's. They are moderately, though not overly, long and fairly slim, and George Pound had kissed every one of them. I only hoped that my knuckles did not drag too noisily along the carpet.